Our scripture this morning is the first chapter of Genesis, the story of creation. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be a dome in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And so God made the dome and separated the waters that were under the dome from the waters that were above the dome. And it was so. God called the dome sky. And there was evening and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the sky be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth. And the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth put forth vegetation, plants, yielding seeds, the fruit trees of every kind on earth that bear fruit with the seed in it." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed of every kind, and trees of every kind bearing fruit with the seed in it. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night. And let them be for a sign and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be lights in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth." And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. God set them in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky." And so God created the great sea monster, and every living creature that moves of every kind, with which the waters swarm, and every winged bird of every kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the sea, and let the birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures of every kind, cattle and creeping things, and wild animals of the earth of every kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals of the earth of every kind, and the cattle of every kind, and everything that creeps upon the ground of every kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. God said, see, I have given you every living plant that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. The word of the Lord. When we listen to the story of a very common event that we see as creation, I think it's important to remember that the people who wrote this part of the scriptures were really dealing in poetry. This is not science. This is not geography. This is not biology. This is not genetics. This is a very simple version of a grandfather responding to the question of his child, how did all this happen? And not having the scientific knowledge perhaps that we have today, the grandfather and grandmother answered in the only way they could, with the images that they saw around them, and how they themselves saw that there had to be somehow a creator, somebody, someone, something that was responsible to make all this happen. One of the saddest things about our whole culture, not only our culture, but our whole history as human beings, that surfaced especially during the Renaissance period, is that there's a big disparity between science and faith and religion. The disparity is there because we all, both are, as Steve said to me this morning, one group is asking the question, answering the question why, and the other one is answering the question how. And the scientists are the how, and the theologians are the why. The two work together in concert, if we allow them to. If we begin at the very beginning, however everything took place, Big Bang, whatever, there's something very valid about the goodness of the creation that you and I walk upon and use today. And it is astounding to think that this earth is several billions of years old. And we make up, in all of our civilizations, probably about 300, 400,000 out of the billions. A little humility on our part to recognize that we are not the ones that made this. Then who are we? And I think it's a fair question. You know, the word that is used in Hebrew for Genesis, the first word is dabar. And dabar can be translated in two ways. One of them is the word, which is why John's gospel begins, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And that Word becomes Jesus, who becomes the Word of God spoken to us, and we inherit the Word so that we may speak our truth to the world. The Word connects the whole from creation down to our very day. The other translation is creative energy. So if you were to write according to the first line of Genesis, John's gospel beginning, it would be, in the beginning, there was creative energy. And creative energy created all that is. And creative energy became part of the human experience. And creative energy from the human experience goes from one to the other and finds its fullness in the creative energy that keeps us together the example of the table of communion, the unity of humankind, goes all the way back to the very first word. We have lost part of that. We've lost some of the reality because we have been listening to our theologies. You and I grew up with a very different approach to creation. We'll talk more about that next week. But let me just say that in the first story, humankind is made in the image of that creative person. Male and female are created in the image of that creative person. It is the creative energy that bonds the souls of these two people together. And they are set to go and multiply and increase and continue the creative process. Period. This is where today you drop a microphone. Done. Nothing else to be said. This translation, this first part of Genesis, is written by what we call the Yahwist. The Yahwist tradition called, anytime they talked about God, they talked about Yahweh. And the name came from breath, because there are no vowels in Hebrew, there are just consonants. And so depending on what vowels you put between the consonants, you come up with various ways of saying Yahweh. Traditionally, Yahweh is Y-A-H-Y-A-W-A-H, Yahweh, okay? You can also put some extra letters in there and translate Jehovah, because the Y in Hebrew is a J. And so you put different letters in there, you come out with Jehovah. Of course, everybody says Jehovah. That's very Protestant nasty. We don't do that because the real name of God is Yahweh. What's important about that, brothers and sisters, is that at the end of the day, the Hebrew people believed that by breathing, we were saying the name of God. Hebrews do not say God. They have titles for God, and there's lots of them. But the Yahwist capitalized on the most important thing about who we are as living people, our breath. By breathing in and breathing out, they say we are saying the name of God. So from the very first breath each one of us took, we were breathing in and breathing out the creative power we call God. And to our last breath, every breath we take says the name of God. Why is that important? We'll come back to that at the end, because I want to do something with that. And I don't want to drag this out, but the mystics talk about the chain of being, which means that we are all interconnected. Now, we talk about community in our times, but we have so much stuff in our history and our definitions that limit our view of each other. We have our prejudices, we have our judgments, we have all the things culturally and religiously and physically, all the things that separate us, and we see all the differences. And we miss out on the ones that unite us. In the chain of being, for the mystical look at life, what creation here story is saying is, in the beginning you have God, and then you have all the angelic things, and then you have the things of the earth, the fish, the seas, and all that stuff, and then you have the plants and the animals, and then you have humankind. And after humankind, you have what we call community. All those things depend on each other. Every one of them is essential for the unity of the earth, for the unity that we experience and so desperately want. The things that religiously we have been taught to hope for and practice and work for is right there. This is an unbreakable dependency we have on the whole system. Now, what happens if you remove one of these links. A part of it is missing. You take away God, you take away the creative energy, and what is left to give life to the rest of the creatures? What are they left to do except to create their own? Remember the golden calf? The gods of our own time have replaced the one creative energy that keeps all of this together. Now, what happens if we take out this link and talk about the earth? What happens when we disconnect ourselves from the earth? What has happened in the last 40,000 years or 50,000 years of human existence? As we have gone from an agrarian culture through the Industrial Revolution into the atomic age, how far removed we can be from the creative energy that kept all of this together. And when we lose a part of one, our connection gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And the community, when we break ourselves up from community, from a sense that we are belonging together, that somehow we have become individuals, and our religion has taught us to be individual. Next week. It taught us to be individual because we were all born in sin, and our goal in life is to save ourselves and to worry most about my eternal soul. And when I become the focus on any level, immediately, I am separating myself from the community. Think of all the ways that we have separated ourselves from each other. Think of the result of our separations from each other. When we talk about creation, brothers and sisters, and what's important about this, the mystics point out that there is only one way to understand who we really are. In psychology and sociology aside for the moment, who we really are happens before we are even born. Where psychology really doesn't have much sway because the brain isn't totally formed, and sociology certainly hasn't connected this person to the rest of the world. And what do we have? We have life that is seeking meaning and that has meaning already because it is a part of the creative energy, the creative process. Children are not born except that they are part of the creative process. And when they are born, unlike what our religion has taught us, that we are born in sin, we are born nasty and unacceptable and a blotch on the face of the earth as far as God is concerned. We are born as a part of the extension of God into creation, into the world. We are never, ever, 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 ever separated from the creative energy. We would not exist except that we are still connected to the source of our being. And however we find ourselves engaged in that, we experience a wholeness that otherwise we would miss if we are separated from that in any way. Somehow the creative energy, the creative process, the meaningfulness of life has to come from our heads and not from our being, from our developments and not from the reality. When we lose touch with the bond that is ours necessarily because we are living. We lose touch with the possibility of having not only a meaningful life, but of recognizing the world in an altogether different place. It's difficult for us in the 21st century not to separate ourselves from all these things and to see ourselves as individuals worrying about ourselves. What's going to happen to me? What's going to be there at the end? How am I going to survive? Necessary, essential, but not the priority. If that's the priority, then you can see why this doesn't mean anything and it says nothing. We, brothers and sisters, as believers, are called to be in touch with ourselves as we truly are. To get there, it's not just a matter of changing our thinking, because these thoughts can be pushed out by other thoughts, be pushed out by other ideas, be pushed out as we keep developing new thoughts and new theologies. The one solid thing we have as people of faith from the mystical people who saw something beyond their own lives, and they all agree, and none of this is part of church theology, none of it. They all agree that we are one in the same time, an extension of, but never separated from, God. No sin can stop that. Sin, in this model, is basically a chain of being. If we violate somewhere in the chain of being, that's sin. Not that somebody was born and created and made a sin, and therefore we're all sinners. If there's a sin, it's a social sin. It's a morality sin. It's a justice sin. It's a violation of this truth that we are all connected to this God. And it's a very hard thing to swallow because we've been trained so much. Meister Eckhart, 14th century mystic, said, God is like an underground river, a river that flows and emerges from time to time to water the earth, but continues to flow, and everything that flows from it is still a part of the river. It cannot exist except that it's a part of the river. Hildegard of Bingen said, once you understand and you know that there is nothing that you have or do that does not somehow express the truth, the simple truth, that God is a part of who you are. Unless and until we do that, we are lost because we're left to our own devices. Next week, we'll talk about eating of the tree in the garden, the tree of good and evil, which has nothing to do with what we normally think. Eating the fruit of the tree meant that we decided we were going to make the decisions about what was right and wrong, not God. It wouldn't come from the chain of being. It wouldn't come from this reality. It would come because we made the decision that this is how we're going to live our lives. Truth, brothers and sisters. And I've always, always wanted so desperately people to have experience of God. And we talk about having those. The only way to best prepare ourselves, the best way to prepare ourselves, two things: illness and the darkness. Darkness is going to become a friend. Stillness. Stillness is so hard to come by because we're so busy. We got so many things. Our heads are filled with things, all the stuff we had to do. Right now you're saying, oh my God, it's after 11, and we got things to do. I'm feeling that too. What would I like us to do at the end of every Sunday service, and maybe periodically do throughout, is to stop and just be still. And to be still, this is very uncomfortable. What I'm going to suggest to you is extremely uncomfortable. You do it all the time. You're doing it right now. You have been doing it since you came into church. So don't let it be uncomfortable. I want you to breathe. Just breathe. But this breath, do it with as few distractions as possible. For a moment, close your eyes. Open your mouth a little bit. And breathe through your mouth. And all I want you to do is follow your breath as you breathe in and breathe out. Don't force it. Breathe in, breathe out. And you may find that in breathing in and breathing out, with your mouth slightly open, you may be saying, yeah. I'd like to suggest for you that you take this home, the picture. Maybe put it someplace where you can spend a minute or two by yourself with the picture, calling to mind that the goal and the beginning and the end of our lives, we are never, ever, ever separated from the creative spirit, God. And then, if you'd like a reflection, I put a little meditation line at the end. It says, meditation point for this week. This is from Meister Eckhart. God created all things in such a way that they are not outside himself. Rather, all creatures flow outward, but nonetheless remain within God. Consider what it means to remain within God for you. It means something different to each one of us. What does remaining within God mean to you in your life? And if you want a glimpse at next week, read the cartoon. Amen.